who are both involved in the production of Heartland Theaters. It happened one night. Auditions are coming up, submissions just in the next couple days, and this is going to be radio broadcast in mid-April. Welcome to see you at the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So we have not in the past been fortunate enough to cover Heartland. Have you both been involved with the company for a while?
I've been the artistic director for the last seven or eight years. I started with them. We're celebrating our 35th anniversary this year. And I was involved with them pretty much from the beginning, before we even had a home, any kind of, you know, brick and mortar. And I cut my teeth. I tell people that I really kind of came of age with this theater. So it's my second home.
Yeah, you must have been really young when you started, because, you know, that's...
Well, I was right out of college, pretty much.
Right.
So, yeah, it's been a long trek, but it's been a great, you know, a great trek.
And so you have a brick and mortar space now in Normal, or...
Yes, we rent from the town of Normal. We're in North Normal. That's where we've been since the early 90s. We've got a theater nestled in a larger building. It's a thrust stage. We accommodate about 90 patrons. And that's where we've been producing theater this whole time.
How many plays do you usually produce a year?
In a typical season, we do four plays, two in the fall, two in the spring. And then over the summer, the summers are dedicated to producing new work. We have our 10-minute play festival, and that's quickly followed on the heels of that by new plays from the Heartland, which is similar to the 10-minute play festival, but it's the works are longer. Rather than being 10 minutes, they're half an hour to 45 minute one acts, and it's exclusively open to Midwestern writers, a 9-state region here in the Midwest.
But this is actually my first project with Heartland. I am on the faculty of Illinois State University. I teach directing in the theater program, and I'm the associate artistic director of Illinois Shakespeare Festival, which operates in the summertime. I've had the pleasure of seeing many shows at Heartland since I've been here, but this is great. This is the I have a little extra time right now during the pandemic, and this was just like a great opportunity. I'm really excited about the project.
What have you been doing with your in the theater program at ISU? Have you been in person? Have you been able to do any sort of creation with your kids?
We have been mainly virtual, but we've done a full virtual season. So we have this semester, we're doing a production of Row by Lisa Loomer virtually. We're doing Gross Indecency, the Oscar Wilde play by Moises Kaufman virtually. And then we have a guest artist, Tyrone Phillips, who's a graduate of the University of Illinois program, artistic director of Definition Theater in Chicago, is coming to direct a production of Barbecue that is planned to be outdoors at this moment in time.
Oh, really?
Has there been any other, was there any outdoor theater in the Bloomington Normal area during this summer of 2020?
Not to my knowledge, Reese. Do you know of anything?
Yeah, the Shakespeare Festival canceled. Pretty much everybody canceled. And very quickly started, mounting things on Zoom. Mm-hmm. That's kind of become the de facto way of doing things.
Did Heartland do any Zoom events or productions?
No, we have turned our attention to radio, and it's worked out quite well for us. We have a partnership with WGLT, WCBU. Last October, I had been kicking around an idea for quite some time. I wanted to do the original Orson Welles radio broadcast of War of the Worlds, managed to secure the rights to it. And we assembled a team of actors. I directed it, and we rehearsed the whole thing virtually. All rehearsals were via Zoom, which was very, very interesting. But when it came around to taping it, we did tape in person, masked, socially distanced. I was up there wiping down the microphones after every actor stepped forward. And then it was mixed. Aaron Pellucci was our sound designer, did a fantastic job. And it had one broadcast on WGLT per our agreement. And then it was available for about a 2-week period for streaming.
So you're talking about, like, that's what you arranged for with the rights?
It was interesting because I just assumed it was in the public domain.
Yeah. Right.
Turned out it was not. So I'm glad we did a little more digging so that we weren't violating any copyright laws. But they were happy to accommodate us. They as long as we, you know, weren't putting it out there forever.
Right.
They said it can't be downloadable, which was fine with us. And then after War of the Worlds, that was so successful for us, we followed it up with The Gift of the Magi. That was our Christmas show, the O. Henry short story. Mm-hmm. And one of our directors at Heartland, Sandy Zielinski, has been with us a long time, former ISU faculty. She directed that. And now we're on to the next thing, which I understand the two of you might audition for.
Yes, and so is this going to be done a similar way, where you're going to be doing auditions by audio submission, but then and rehearsals by Zoom, or a rehearsal?
Yeah, I'll let okay. Robert speak to that. I had wanted to work with Robert for quite some time, and so I was happy that he had an opening. The plan is to proceed in the same fashion. Robert, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So we'll do submissions, and you can go to heartlandtheater.org and take a look at the different sides from the radio broadcast. And we will rehearse via Zoom, probably weeknights, a short amount of time. I have a short Zoom attention span, so probably no more than 75 minutes at a shot. And we will rehearse that way. Around mid-March, we will gather together in a socially distant way. Our sound designer this time is amazing sound designer Tony Reimer, who will be designing all of the Foley effects for the radio play.
Right. And I should add that Tony designed sound for us for Gift of the Magi as well.
Nice. So you guys kind of have this down. I produced a radio show last year, or was it? I guess it was in.
You're talking about Goblins or Wonderful
Yeah, Goblins.
Life?
Goblins in 2019, I guess it was. No, time is going so fast. Yeah. So I know that a radio production is, you know, different in a lot of ways. And then with the Foley table, it adds a lot of complexity. It was a learning process for me to produce that. So I really have a lot of respect for the audio part of it and the Foley.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, that definitely wouldn't work with Zoom because of this sort of thing. Like, the sound would be interrupting, and it'd be just like why you can't do music performances via
right.
Zoom.
Right.
Yeah, I just think it's a wonderful form of pandemic theater because right. it asks the audience to bring some of their imagination to the process the way you might ask someone to do in a live venue.
Right.
Yeah. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from our patrons, especially some of our older patrons. You know, there's a wonderful sense of nostalgia that listening to these pieces brings up. Some of them have talked about the Lux Radio Hour. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Mercury Theater on the Air, that was Orson Welles' company. It really takes them back, and it's fun, you know, it's fun to travel back in time and try to approximate the way. That was one big question that my first sound designer and I wrestled with was, you know, how true to the fidelity of the recording do we want to be? Do we want all those pops and crackles and hisses, or do we want to clean it up? And what we landed on was somewhere in between. I will tell you that we did not produce any of the sound effects live. We didn't do any Foley. It was all digital, added in post. And that's the way we did it for both War of the Worlds and Gift of the Magi. Tony Reimer also composed original music for Gift of the Magi, which was lovely. Such mm-hmm. a nice touch.
That's great. And so the project that you guys are doing coming up is It Happened One Night. Does anybody right?
Was that, was that chosen also because of kind of the radio vibe of the feel of that era, or were there other reasons that they seemed well-suited?
You know, War of the Worlds was right on right around Halloween, October 30th, which was the original broadcast date in 1938. And then Gift of the Magi was a perfect Christmas show. Right. So looking, you know, down the pike, I was thinking about, well, what could we do around Valentine's Day? And I started thinking about romantic comedies. That was how I arrived at It Happened One Night. Unfortunately, we're not going to make that deadline. February was just coming up way too fast on us with the holidays. So we're still doing a romantic comedy.
Which is great any time of year. You don't have to.
Yeah, exactly. And interestingly, I had only seen the film for the first time in the last year, which is probably why it was fresh in my mind. And I thought, I wonder if Lux Radio Hour, you know, did an adaptation of this. It turns out they, not only that, but they did adaptations of Casablanca, you know, all of the classics, and most of them, they brought the original film stars over to record. It's, and Cecil B. DeMille was hosting. It was very, very cool.
So is there a unique radio script then? It's not a play script, it's a radio script, or is that one and the same?
That's right, it's the script that ran in, I think, 1939 during the Lux Radio Hour. So it's designed with Lux, which was a brand of laundry detergent that evidently makes your skin just feel amazing. And there are commercials for Lux that are built in through that.
I was wondering.
I saw that during
They're really funny and like, you know, very much of their time period.
Right.
I saw that during in the roles to be cast, there is the Lux team of an announcer and then Cecil DeMille. Like,
yeah.
And your son Parker needs to audition for the announcer. That's right up his alley. So that's really interesting. So this is Eric Schacht and Linda Evans with See You at the Show. We are talking with Heartland Theater Companies about the auditions and performance of It Happened One Night. Auditions can be submitted via audio January 24th to the 30th. And how are you wanting these auditions to be submitted?
Well, there is a link on the Heartland page that kind of explains how to submit the audio file. So we don't need visuals, but what we need is, you know, a clear recording of your voice. There are, I think, 5 or 6 different options. So you can read through and decide which character you feel you'd like to audition for.
Can people audition for more than one part? Are you okay?
Yeah, if you would like to, I would say probably no more than 2 just for the sake of time. But yes, if you feel like, you know, you may, and there's just some wonderful roles. It's such a great story, you know, it's a beautiful romantic comedy. It's one of only 3 films to win all 5 big Academy Awards.
Wow.
Right, I'd forgotten that, yeah.
Picture director, actor and actress, and adapted screenplay.
If people want to watch the film before they audition, or is it on Netflix or someplace?
It's on, I believe I watched it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Oh, really? That's great. I own a copy, and so I'm happy to loan my copy.
Yeah, I saw actually that, and I don't know how the rights go down for this, but there are YouTube segments that you can put together to watch the whole thing in little 10-minute clips, because I wanted to find the clip that covered the audition piece that I was going to do, and that was actually very easy to find, and not very easy to replicate, but very easy to find. It was interesting though to see that one of the cool things about finding the movie version of the monologue was just to see the subtle differences that were made. Like, and I just wondered, like, what choice, you know, made that particular rewording better for radio than it was for the movie? And so it's really cool. Actually.
Well, there needs to be a certain element of audio description that needed to be embedded in the dialogue. The main character, Ellie, goes on this Greyhound road trip with Peter, who is played by Clark Gable. And they stop at various locations and they put up this famous kind of iconic film moment. They put up a sheet between their 2 beds when they have to sleep at night for modesty to separate them.
It's the wall of Jericho, because, right?
He refers to it as the wall of Jericho. It's everything in it is just insanely witty. But he has to kind of describe that whole action of putting up the sheet and what he's doing as part of the dialogue. So there's that. And very much, it's only an hour long. So if you watch the movie, it's really edited to focus on their relationship. So there are certain scenes that are cut. And it's wonderful because she takes this journey. She's a very wealthy socialite who's lived kind of in isolation, you know, in this wealthy world. She has gotten eloped with this guy who her father loathes because he thinks he's just after her money, which is actually true. So she runs away from his yacht in Florida and gets on a Greyhound bus to meet her new husband. On the way, she runs into Peter, who's a reporter, you know, really like quick-witted reporter who recognizes her, and they strike up a deal that he won't reveal that where she is if he waits to run the story until after she gets to New York. Mm-hmm. So along the way, they fall in love with each other. But I also think it's such a sweet story because you see someone who's very much in her bubble, Ellie at the beginning, during a time of, you know, real chaos and pain in the country, actually, we're talking about the Depression, and she sees all kinds of things that she hasn't seen before, and it opens her eyes to a new way of thinking. It's also so lovely because they each have very strong negative impressions of each other at the beginning, and they argue a lot, but they work through those and find the common humanity in each other by the end of the radio play and the movie. And ultimately, of course, fall in love. So it's just a really sweet, sweet story.
Right. And it sounds like it can be timeless. You know, it's okay so, that this was written a while ago. So,
yeah. I mean, the references, you know, they feel like, it feels like the 30s, but it also feels relatable. And interestingly, this is one of the very last pre-code films. So this was right at the very, very ends before a lot of the censorship rules were widely adhered to. So they had the allusions to sexuality and some other things. There's a famous scene where she lifts up her her dress to show her leg to hail a cab. There's references to their, you know, intimacy at the end of the film that probably wouldn't have been allowed, like just 4 months later is when a lot of those came into effect. So, it's this sweet little window into that period of cinema.
So have you ever cast a show before that is going to be voice only, like a radio show?
Never. It's the first time I've ever done anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, because I guess it's just interesting to think about when I think about directing a show and callbacks and stuff when you're looking for, you know, pairing up actors by chemistry. And that usually is as much a visual thing, more of probably of a visual physical thing.
Well, we will have one night on January 31st reserved for callbacks. Those will be via Zoom, so Robert has an opportunity to see people and to read them opposite one another, look at combinations, things of that sort. But up to that point, he'll just be listening to the voices and going off of that.
And I think I really need to discipline myself to focus on voice as opposed to anything else, even during those callbacks, which should be interesting.
It's a whole different medium.
Like, I know that I sound like I have a wonderful, big, full head of hair. And so that's how I can, so I think radio might be good for me in that sense.
Well, you know, Robert really touched on something important earlier. He talked about imagination and just how important it is for the listener to be able to engage their imagination. There's kind of a continuum. If you look at the movies on one end and radio on the other, movies show everything to you. Movies really, you know, it's not as active an experience for the viewer because, you know, if a scene is set atop a mountaintop in Nepal, they can take you right there and show it to you. When you get to theater, you know, suddenly you have to create things expressionistically. And then radio, you know, you're taking the visual away. With each step on that continuum, it really requires more and more that the audience suspend their disbelief and really use their imagination to visualize these worlds. And that's where the sound effects really come into play with a right. good sound designer. And luckily, you know, we've had two great ones with Aaron Pellucci and Tony Reimer. That just sort of completes the whole thing.
I'm curious about Heartland because obviously for this type of show, you can pretty much pull in from, you know, all around the area, not just Bloomington Normal. Because really you just need to be able to make, I don't know if his recording is going to be in one day or in a series of days.
It'll be over a weekend, March 13th and 14th. So mm-hmm. if people from outside the area want to submit audition tapes to Robert, they're certainly welcome to do so. All of our rehearsals, as I said before, will be virtually, so you won't have to travel for that. However, the taping is in person, so they would have to have the ability to travel here on that weekend.
And we are asking for a negative COVID test before right. the taping.
Yes, right.
Has Heartland pulled people in from the Champaign-Urbana community for previous productions that you're aware of, Reese?
Yeah, we have. We've had people from Peoria, Champaign, a lot of the outlying areas. Our footprint is gradually getting bigger and bigger, and we like that.
It's a wonderful, wonderful, quirky, intimate space. It's cool. I mean, yeah. It reminds me of the Station Theater a little bit, but it has its own, you know, its own character.
Very small, very intimate. Yeah.
Those are my favorite. I mean, I'm on the board at the station. We were both involved at the Station Theater. That's my favorite.
What is your connection to Robert with the station?
Okay. I went to the University of Illinois for my theater degree. So, I never worked at the station, but I have many, many friends, who have worked there over the years. Just a wonderful space and, you know, just great programming too.
Yeah, so right, capacity there is a little bit less than the 90 that you mentioned, but it probably is the same sort of vibe.
Depending on how we set up the stage and things like that. But right. yes, normally it's like 65 on average. But how are you guys doing? Like, are you asking for donations and things like that right now? Has the pandemic hit you hard?
Well, yeah, certainly it's impacting us. We have not charged anything thus far for any of our productions. We have a button on our webpage that you can click to donate now, we invite people to give that way.
Right. I know at the station, you know, we pay directors and, you know, something. It's never as much as you would actually get paid, like, professionally. I don't know if Heartland ever pays their directors
in a normal situation we pay all of the individuals on the creative team, the director, the designers. Actors are not paid.
Right, same at the station. So I'm sure, and you have the overhead of having a space too, so
right.
Yeah. There's several of our theater companies in town. They don't have their own space. So in some ways it's a blessing during this time. It's not a blessing normally, but during the pandemic, mm-hmm. they don't have to worry about rent or a mortgage or anything. So we're also very interested in, you know, supporting all the local theater and surrounding areas and making sure you guys are all staying safe and, you know, being supported financially too.
We're really curious about how this comes off also, because we've thought about, we have a dedicated radio space that we can pretty much do anything theater-wise that we want with every week. Mm. So I guess, you know, when we've talked about, and I know that various rights-holding companies are being incredibly flexible now with what they're doing and ways that they're doing it for online use for radio use as well. And we just haven't pulled the trigger on actually doing something like we've talked about doing. So we're gonna be following along this very closely. And I don't know, the shows that you did in the fall and over Christmas, are they still available, or did you say they kind of just had to poof, go away?
The agreement that we had was just for one broadcast. And then we left them, there was a link you could click on if you went directly to WGLT. And that stayed up for about 2 weeks before we had to take it down. I will say that PlayScripts, who holds the rights to War of the Worlds, when I was first looking at that, the original was all men, you know, and I wanted to create some opportunities for actresses. And I found a few roles in there, especially the announcers and like the switchboard operators when the Martians are descending on Grover's Mill and, you know, everything's going nuts. I saw no reason why those couldn't be changed to women. And so I asked for permission to do that, and they readily said, yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's fine.
Yeah, that was another question I was going to have. It's if, you know, you're okay with any gender auditioning for
it. Yeah. Yeah. We encourage that. Yeah.
Wonderful.
There's even a newsboy, 10, 11 years old, which, you know, it could be a young boy, it could be a young girl, or if you can make your voice go a little bit higher, you know.
We've had
Robert has pointed out.
Katie Prosize. Excellent. Yeah, so we've definitely had that. So
had you said before that was Sandy Zielinski involved with one of the productions?
Yes. Yeah, she's been an integral part of Heartland, also going way, way, way back. She's directed I don't know how many productions for us. And I asked her if she was interested in directing our second radio play, which was The Gift of the Magi. And she jumped at the opportunity, and that too just really turned out great. It was an very interesting experience for her, and I think she was a little nervous going into it, as was I, because it's a different animal, it's a different beast, and it in rehearsals, you know, she started just kind of closing her eyes or not looking at the images of the actors on Zoom so that she could pay attention to the nuances of their voice and give them direction in regard to that. And I think that's what you have to do.
Right.
You've got to stop looking at the image of the person and really listen to the voice, see if all the colors that you want are coming out in the voice, because that's what drives the piece forward, is the quality of the actor's voices.
That's really interesting, because, well, Sandy has a special place in my heart because she commuted all the way to Parkland Theater in the fall of 2014 and directed Leading Ladies, which was my biggest, bestest role ever. And and she brought, it was the first, I have this autoimmune disease, alopecia. It was my first time on stage as completely bald, and I got to cross-dress during the show. So when I got to be a woman for half of Leading Ladies, it was so awesome to be bald. Because it was just a seamless transition. But I do remember one of the things that she had, there was this very physical scene that I had with the other actor and we weren't getting it right. And she had us, you know, not just come and sit down on the end of the stage with our legs hanging off, but she had us close our eyes and do our lines. And it was like very radio-like. And she had us just, she was very, I mean, such an amazing director. So just hearing her name evoked all these memories in me. But then thinking of that teaching moment when she had us just do voices, no physical, no visual. And then, you know, then something happened and that scene was like a really special, magical scene after that. So I love Sandy. I'm glad just to hear her name and be in touch with her.
She's one of the family at Heartland. She's one of
Great.
The family.
I'm glad she's still involved. That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for joining us on See You at the Show. We're very much excited to promote the auditions and then subsequently maybe get you both back here once you have a cast in place and audition and rehearsals are going on, just to let us update us on how it's going. And we look forward to following Heartland Theater for many events to come. It's an easy trip down 74. There's no reason not to make it.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This has been the Weft Courier for Thursday. Join us for the Weft Courier every weekday for Democracy Now! At 4 p.m., followed by two additional programs of information and analysis. Up next, Surfability Freakout Radio.
The views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the board of directors, or WEFT associates.
It was a grim day in history. The horror was unforgettable.